This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
All right, that's a good feel. Mugs are something I've always loved, I've always been a part of for a long time. I kind of got pigeonholed in design as being the monster guy. And actually, we should introduce ourselves. I realize I jumped right into it. Hi, I'm Adam Daigle. I'm managing developer at Paizo.
And I'm Michael Sayre. I'm the newest member of the organized play development team at Paizo.
And I'm Taylor Fisher. I'm a freelance artist, and I've been working with Paizo for like 6 years now. Yeah. Whee!
Yeah, so in the course of me, you know, getting labeled as the monster guy, I've probably written and or developed a few hundred monsters, and sometimes, whenever I first started, one of the things I really leaned on was folklore. I really enjoyed monsters from, you know, just different stories, because to be quite frank, monsters are a representation of some sort of fear of humankind, and turns out, like, we love scaring ourselves, and we're not really that much different than we were a few, you know, a couple of thousand years ago. All we have more than that is context. So folklore monsters are usually like certain categories, and so that's one of the things I really loved. But I've also done monsters that are from pop culture, or one of the things I've kind of leaned to in the last couple of years is ones that would represent some sort of mechanical niche. Like, I need a monster that does this thing to challenge this group or to push this narrative forward.
Pretty much every monster that I've worked on has been in a third-party book up to this point. Paizo has not entirely turned me loose on monsters yet. We're getting there, though. There's some scenarios that have some not entirely original monsters in them that I got to dive in and start playing with. The mechanical focus of monsters has been something that's really interesting, because there's monsters that thematically can be really fun, and then you sit down at the table and they don't quite do what you want them to do, or they don't quite challenge the group in the right way. And so it can be really fun to take something that seems very classic and seems like it's been done before, and then reimagine it into something new. Instead of a T-Rex that just bites you for a buttload of damage and is like, oh, well, I got bit really hard. That sucks. It starts getting more entertaining when you have, you know, a dinosaur that goes full Jurassic Park and throws you in the air and then bats you with its tail and things like that. So I really like kind of reimagining how a monster can be presented as being one angle to tackle it. And then also, when you introduce like a new subsystem or a new theme, something like psychic magic or you know, another book or system like that, having the ability to come in and say, okay, I've got a whole new tool set. What thematically can I think of from lore, from pop culture, from, you know, whatever kind of open source material is out there? Can I now take and create or do in a new way that's never been done before? Or at least, you know, that hasn't quite been done this way before. Because there's been a lot of monsters for a long time, as Adam said.
Yeah, got a long history of that. And the thing is also with, like, especially in folklore monsters, you'll see the same type of thing represented in a dozen different cultures, because we're all human and we all have those same fears. We all have those same things that we're trying to explain with stories.
Oh, no. Poor thing got shot.
Twice.
He's already dead, though, so it doesn't do anything.
So, for some of you who have made monsters in your games, what have been some of your inspirations?
Movies?
Other monsters.
Other monsters? What do you mean by that?
I put something in a dungeon recently to make the players think it was an Imelodge.
Nice. Back.
Finding the gaps. There's a lot of tradition that exists in different monsters. Monsters that have always existed in one form or another. Finding what hasn't been done that therefore indicates. Does that make sense? I'm sorry, that came out really terrible. One of the books that I'm actually selling in the dealer's room right now includes an angel that I created that I actually really like, right? I call the primary, where I took the succubus, the image of the grand sexy demon that's going to prey on your lust that has existed for a long time. And I thought, well, there's no angelic counterpart to that that specifically says, I'm the angelic version of the beautiful woman idea. So I invented the primary to fill that gap. And that's fun sometimes to do because we have so many stories that we've been conditioned in how to tell because we have 20, 30, 40 years of this monster existing. Think about, well, what stories haven't we told yet because we were too busy following that tradition?
Gotcha.
Yes. I like it like minions and or masters. So like creatures, if I want maybe a lesser version of it because my player is a lower level, what kind of minions does this creature have? Or if I like a creature but my players are too high level for it, it's like, okay, what would be the master of this and have these other minions?
Oh, nice. Yeah. And a lot of, when you've done that, have you had them have symbiotic relationships in some way?
I find some type of synergy, maybe there's a weakness of the creature, but its master doesn't have that weakness or something like that.
Nice. Let's go, blue hat in the back.
I like taking regular animals and finding evolutionary alternatives.
Nice.
If they were around different stuff, what would they get?
I like that, yeah. I've used similar techniques, but with environmental things, taking, it's like, okay, we're telling this story set in this one particular type of environment, using some real world science to make something fantastic from that.
Give something the mantis shrimp's cavitation attack or whatever.
Right there.
Sometimes I like to pick a thing that I enjoy in fantasy and think, all right, how can I corrupt this and ruin it? I like superheroes. What if there is this ghost that possesses a mask, tells you to wear it, and then it takes all the things you're mad about, you're vengeful about, and you just feel this urge to go out and fix things in the worst way possible? You think crime is too bad? What if you just killed all the criminals? You think the government's corrupt? Time to get rid of them. You think your friends have been slighting you behind their back? Well, they won't know it's you if you're wearing a mask.
Nice. I'm going to peek over here for a second. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I guess one thing I like to do is shift up environments some. One of the things that I guess my players liked the most was when they were on a boat going to a strange island and an aquatic bullet started attacking.
Isn't a land shark in the water just a shark?
It's an aquatic land shark.
It's like a mermaid.
Just a shark.
Mission and artist, I need to see this.
All right, marine shark with gray hoodie.
One thing I often create monsters just based on my players' backgrounds. Like something they say in their history, their parents were murdered by an undead draconic humanoid, and I can't find that. And then I need to make that fit in. And sometimes I'll actually have bad guys that I just don't say what they are until I hear the players speculate about them and how to make them with something really good, and then I'm like, that's what it is.
To use their fears against them.
Right, yeah.
They're playing off that, it's fun to ask yourself what fear you're trying to capture with what you're mimicking, right? If you think about the movie It Follows, the thing always comes after you at the same pace, and that preys on the fear of being chased beyond your limit of endurance, right? Or, creatures in the forest, it's because you're afraid of the dark, away from the light source.
Mm-hmm.
So what fear are you trying to prey on, and how do you capture it? This thing? If you're afraid of the dark, is it incorporeal so you can't see it? What are you going to do with it?
Absolutely.
Seems like I've noticed that my players' favorite monsters are not monsters at all, but illusions that I was trying to intimidate them with. It's all cinema. It's all oh man, I don't know what that is, but it's scary.
That can be a really fun thing to do with a monster, though, is the monster itself, especially in a game like Pathfinder, right? Once you know what it is, you can probably kill it. That's just kind of a staple of like the heroic fantasy genre. But it's really fun when you've got a monster that takes the players a while to actually figure out what it is, where it is, what's happening. And I think that's probably one of my favorite types of monsters, are the monsters that just have that naturally kind of inbuilt suspense, where you see that, you know, like that, going all the way back to like an invisible stalker, you know, just that, how long has it been there? How many more are there? What don't we know about this thing? So that even after they've had that moment of heroism where they've overcome this, there's still that little bit of doubt of like, okay, well, that was done, but what's next?
It's kind of blending the fear of the unknown concept with, oh, let's sprinkle some uncertainty that's going to linger for a while.
Yes.
Since we have an artist in here, let's talk about some things that are particularly good and frightening for, like, visually about monsters. Because, you know, our game is very narrative-based, and you know, only see the picture when the GM shows you while holding over the... but there's a lot of description, and so, like, what are some of the things that are just, like, intrinsically horrific when it comes to monsters, right?
Tusks. Not teeth, but tusks.
All right. Right there.
Any fluids dripping somewhere they shouldn't be.
All right, next to you.
I was going to say, I think it's creepy to not give them a picture. I try to avoid showing them the picture on like the page or anything, just because then they don't know what it is. They can't be like, oh, I've seen that art, I know what that is.
And if people are applying their own fears, then, you know, like, you're going to see it different than you are, and then you are.
You know, it's got, I'll just be like, yeah, it's got big old shark teeth and pointies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just pick like a few features from the book and
let someone else fill in the blanks in their own frightening head.
Okay. So the way I describe this would be incongruous anatomy. Mm-hmm. Like, I forget, Lucrota?
Yeah,
everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Because they're
like kind of canid looking, but and they've got hooves, but that's not the weird part. The weird part is that they have human teeth. Like, human teeth on something that isn't a person looks really frightening. And so...
The Uncanny Valley? Is that what you meant to talk about? Like, it's, like, kind of humanoid, but it doesn't really go all the way there. So it's just this, like, gray area of, like, spook.
Like, hands on feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, the Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth with, like,
Yeah.
You can do a lot with a very little just by, like, taking two things that really don't belong together and putting them together. I was doing some work on a scenario, and I was looking at all the different, like, Asurendras and Upasundas, and those are things where it's, like, a humanoid, and generally, like, a very physically fit humanoid, but it's got six eyes, or two faces, and those are more extreme divergences, but even just those things, like, goat eyes are creepy, right? And so if you take something that looks like something really familiar and, like, kind of comforting, and then you give it goat eyes, all of a sudden, for a very minimal amount of effort, you've got something horrific.
And that's one thing that shows is, like, using elements of a thing or too many of a thing works, but then blending two incongruous things into one, you run into a problem of something that we call deadline monsters, which apparently the ancient Egyptians were really fond of. It's like, oh, let's take a lion and put a human head on it. Yeah, let's go. All right, ship it. You know, ship it.
Stuff you can't see or hear, either because they're manipulating the environment around you or because they themselves are inherently, like, silent or...
That's a very difficult thing to illustrate.
Yeah. No,
let's go right there.
I generally find anything that comes out of walls or shown out of walls, whether it's, like, using burrow speed or was the wall or is a ghost manifesting through a wall... Just that whole idea of, oh, that was a safe spot over there a moment ago, and now that's where the monster is.
The vulnerability, because you have no barriers, no protection.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Well, I was going to go along with the Uncanny Valley human parts on something else, but then I remembered what might be one of the scariest monsters, everything about the Wendigo. motherfuckers too. The way they look terrifying in the art, without knowing any of their stats, the fact that in combat they're a monstrosity that can end you, the fact that their flavor has them messing with the party for weeks on end, and of course everyone's favorite conversion mechanics. I think that's one of the scary things, when the monster can horribly and painfully turn the party members or their friends into it.
Yeah.
Forgot cannibalism.
Yeah.
Cannibalism
is always
scary. Cannibalism. Who can forget cannibalism?
That's always a nice splash of spice.
I will work my way across the room, so...
Turkoration.
Building off something that's been mentioned in parts of a lot of people's answers, I feel like anything that has a memorable detail, it's one of those things they talk about how, in order to make someone swallow a big thing, focus on something small, to the storytelling sort of things. So, if you have a monster that clicks its head to the side every few seconds, that is a memorable detail that makes players go, what the frick is that? Why is it doing it? The monster can be anything, but if it's got a detail that sticks out, that's what people remember. The thing we talked about, putting six eyes on something, that becomes the detail they remember. They'll always remember, that's the six-eyed thing. And the more believable, or the more interesting, or simply the more unnecessary that memorable detail is, the more it sticks in the mind and makes it therefore something memorable. I found most of the most terrifying monsters are not the ones with 50 fangs and giant gruesome heads, because then they're trying to scare you and that makes you feel the rope and you kill it. Like building off of this answer with the Wendigo, it's the thing that just looks at you and you know there's something really, really off and terrible about it. And the fact that it looks so dangerous without having 500 mouths, you want to know why it's dangerous and why they're putting this in front of you. And that's what
it is. Right, so, yeah, pull that.
Eyes. The more eyes, the better. All of the eyes.
Alright, we'll do you and then you, yeah.
Oh, okay. Changing shapes, like elongating or squashing parts of the anatomy, right? Like if the creature stands at 5'10", but its arms are 8 feet long and just dragging behind it on the ground, that's creepy, you know? It's just why?
One thing related to changing form, I've learned that is a big pet peeve with art sometimes. Because
transforming.
What's that? Yes, Sarah, what's up?
No transforming monster.
Yeah, that's one of the rules we have. Because it's very difficult to pull off and not look silly sometimes. Or
even just permanently, right?
Oh no, as a monster, that's totally fine. I was just saying that that made me think of one of the things that I have to think about when ordering art for monsters. A lot of times it's pick a form. And then let the text say that it does that. Alright, so go ahead.
I was going to say minor asymmetry. Not something that's completely amorphous, right? But just something that's just a little off, right? Maybe the right side of their head's a little bigger. Or it's a humanoid, but it's got three arms, and two of them are on one side of its body. So just that minor asymmetry is something that just makes you feel that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate when paintings are slightly off. So, yeah, I get that.
Well, there's something wrong.
Do we have anyone else on the side?
Felt like I missed a hand. So, we're all talking about, appearance, but my table, we have this thing called shenanigan abilities. And so... I've been running this game for 5-ish years, and I finally got the party up to a high enough level where I can throw them up against like a young adult black dragon. I felt super hype about it, and I was he casts Fireball, and they're they're casters, and I'm yes, they are casters, and the whole entire party just kind of did this head in hands, oh no. They prepared for everything except for the fact that it was a spellcaster. So just shenanigan abilities, stuff that you'd never really account for, but you probably should have expected.
Yeah.
Kind of related to that, so black dragons are one of my absolute favorite dragons.
Yeah.
And part of that goes back to, I have an encounter that I actually have talked about on several different occasions with different groups of people, where the party is hunting a black dragon, and the black dragon knows that it's having adventurers sent after it, because it's kind of been doing its business and intentionally taking people off for a while. And it's just got this massive lair. It refuses to come out of the water longer than just enough to spray the party with acid, and then dive back down, find a new place to come out and come after them. I love the environment angle, and when a monster can really take its environment and make it horrifying. And sometimes that can just be as simple as, like, anything in the water is 10% scarier than the same thing would be out of the water.
I don't know, deserts make stuff pretty rad.
Well, but that's just dry water.
One of the things as far as, like, critter appearance that I've used in the past is, like you were talking about anything in the water, and because, yeah, there's some really messed up things in water, especially the deeper you go. But looking at electron microscope pictures of, like, bugs or little tiny... it's so freaky. What's that?
Like a mosquito's foot in
paper. Yeah, love it. It's got that weird little fly foot where it's, and then the claw on it. Yeah, it's adorable.
A little alien hands. I don't
know. And like the bristly hairs on them. But yeah, like just do like electron microscope bugs, and you can get so many cool ideas from that.
All right.
Oh, in a slightly different direction with it. If you have a group of players, let's say it's played way too much of the game, and it's got tentacles and eyes and mouths and all this stuff that we're scared of seeing, the numbers aren't there, then they're not afraid of you.
Right.
But when it has the crunch and you've got some ability that's just devastating and they haven't seen it yet, and you've got all these, you know, really experienced players around the table, now they are afraid of it, even if it's just for the numbers. And, you know, they've been up against things like Strange Aeons, Pat, right? They're playing against, like, all these crazy monsters, but some of them were really easy to defeat and it didn't have the same sense of fear as the ones that were scary looking and had the crunch to back it up.
Flying polyps?
Hate those.
That's, I mean, that's, you know, kind of going on the Wendigo thing he was talking about. Like, Wendigo is a nice package of all of those things.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to work my way back across. You?
I just wanted to say, Taylor, that thing on the right is mass.
I know.
Thanks for that.
I like how it's
here up here. I'm asleep right now.
Yeah, I was like, super. Because monsters for me, like intelligent monsters, like that's the one that's like, good night. And you're like, oh,
and he's doing the little like hand thing, he's like,
oh my god, it's talking to me.
Yeah, why? It's like, oh.
But it's looking at all of us at the same time.
I love smart and urbane monsters. The monsters that are just a little too classy, but they're still really monstrous.
Yeah, unless we get the fine china. And you're like, oh. No.
It's like, it's because they make us think of the monsters in the real world, which are us.
Yeah. Well, not us. Not this room.
It was man, okay? Man was the real monster the whole time.
Well, for a long time, when people would ask, like, well, what's your favorite fantasy race? And I'd be human. What's your favorite fantasy monster? Human. Or terrible things.
Yeah, I think they're not really creature.
What's that?
Like, without the hair, without the top knot, it'd be kind of creepy. But with the top knot, I think that really makes it. It put effort into its style.
Yeah. It wanted to look pretty.
Yes.
Personal pretty.
Awesome. Oh, it's funny.
Alright, let's go back.
Back to, like, the idea of the Uncanny Valley. Like, kids are kind of creepy because they're already inherently kind of uncanny valley. They're smaller proto-humans. So when you get a monster that's aping like a human kid, it's like you've got two steps into the uncanny valley because it's like not quite a kid and also nowhere near human anymore. Like you get vampires or zombies or something.
Or The Shining.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes suddenly from like, okay, you know, this is a monster that's scary, to suddenly being like, oh god, kill it with fire, don't want it near me.
There's there's a lot of, like, folklore monsters that are, like, child related, because of this insecurity of, you know, like, especially if you have a kid, you're, like, terrified, oh my god, I'm gonna break this thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's, like, I forget what it was from Slavic folklore, and some of them get, like, weirdly specific, like, child who dies that wasn't baptized comes back as this thing. You're
the Lubberkin?
Like, what's that?
The Lubberkin, or it was something like
maybe?
That?
Maybe?
Yeah.
That's a kind of a fairly popular theme throughout a lot of that region.
Dead kids? Yeah.
And it's weird. It's like, and that's uncomfortable in and of itself. to the point that some of that's not necessarily appropriate for our game. But
all right, let's go. Use them more work our way back.
Sometimes for me, more than the physical traits is the behaviors. The monster I mentioned earlier, I thought of as the group comes into the room and. It's the module I'm playing. The only monsters they've got great illusionary abilities, and so all of a sudden, this 15-foot, you know, tall, hoofed demon pops up. When you feel you hear the floor shaking, and you know it's loud. And he reaches over and he grabs a piece of his flesh and he pulls it off, and it manifests as like a flail. And then, I don't know what that is. I don't want to know what that is. I don't want to know.
Absolutely. All right, go directly behind you.
Kind of building on the innocent objects, just like a floating orb that suddenly changes colors from like a white orb to a red orb. Now the whole party knows something's wrong.
With the white and red and the children, I'm already not going to sleep good tonight because I'm now picturing like tiny little clown child demons. I'm intensely uncomfortable now.
If you really didn't know,
actually, just going back to the transformation thing for just a moment, I've actually some of the creepiest art I've seen was that, because what they do is we think of transformation as like a poof of smoke and you're that, or just a quick seamless change. But imagine a transformation where every individual bone and muscle fiber and stretch of skin move at a different rate. I've seen art where like they're cut, like a photo taken halfway between, and it is clearly asymmetrical in the change, uneven, gradual, and very painful. And like when you see like the human half is in grimace and pain, like they don't want it or they're coming through it, that actually adds a really creepy element to that. Because you see the human half, you see the direct contrast of what it was, what it's becoming, mm-hmm. and that can really just make it kind of unsettling.
Like the
flesh
orbs.
Like
the flesh orbs
in
a
horrible.
Yeah.
That's a cool art.
Alright, so right there.
I remember in 3.5, it was, you know, whenever you have things like the cadaver collector, where it's just masses of bodies that have already met ill fates that are like now coming after you, it's kind of. It's interesting to try to wrap your head around, like, how do you deal with something like that? Because it's, you know, it could be a huge thing comprised of hundreds of bodies that's now lurking towards you, and you're like, I'm one person, or I'm, you know, four people, and it's already killed however many others to become itself. So, I don't know. I kind of like seeing, like, the ill fate of what's happened to others and presenting that to the party of what... could happen to them.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
this cube was suspended for a body, puts body on there, and they died, part of it.
Right, let's go over again.
Yeah, one that I just remember recently, there was one of my favorite sort of horrible monsters. It was called, like, the Doom Webs or something, but basically, big giant spiders that got reanimated as undead, and then were filled with swarms of spiders.
Oh,
yeah.
There's all kinds of things.
Like,
you got undead, you got arachnophobia there,
yeah.
You got swarms, there's all kinds of fear going on.
They put a giant rainbow afro on it, and it's like the whole package.
Let's go right here.
Anything that's like festering on it, or like pulsating under the skin, like that kind of stuff, like anything that's just super gross and probably diseased looking,
dude,
can make anything like perfectly
especially if you juxtapose that right on top of an otherwise sexy monster.
Oh, like, yeah, like it looks like it's probably a succubus and then drops the robe and it's just like festering boils and wounds and stuff over
it.
Following up on the idea of the corpse collector, but I don't know if this is necessarily something that has to be inherent to the monster's appearance, more of its, but this could be more of its environment, but anything that collects trophies. Like any time where you can like be in a place and look around and see all of the things that have preceded you there.
Yeah, that element of vanity makes it really awesome.
Let's go in the back.
Anything that's trying to force its way into you.
They're
like trying to be digested by you, or anything that's trying to like injected like eggs into you.
Or
like,
butt flies, or yeah.
Anything
like
that.
Body horror. Right, the back corner.
Kind of building off that, like a slither or the thing, just complete body horror. where you got where you get bodies being absorbed and body parts just growing out of different orifices.
Right, let's go right there.
To build up that idea, a monster when it gets worse after the PC's hit. But it hit nice. The wound, and then it starts coming out of the wound, tentacles, and
what's going on. That was a very meta answer also, because it started with, like, things trying to get into you, and then body horror, and then you're like, and building onto that, things that get worse as you're just like, oh my god, this is getting worse.
And we make this work, yes.
And then that thing starts festering.
Yeah.
anything that automatically suggests the story without actually having to tell you the story. Like something that collects trophies is scary because it suggests the story that this thing has been through and you're guessing what that would be. And if you've got some, you know, creature A that's crawling out of creature B, that tells you that someone must have put creature B in there previously. And anything that suggests to your mind what must have preceded this moment, because your imagination will always be more horrible than the actual history, that can get very creepy.
Anything that preys on
totally
a monster,
blister spider.
Yeah.
It's
that
awesome.
More spiders.
Yes.
Put the bow down.
But then you want to kill it, but you don't want to hit it, because then the spiders come out.
Yeah, I love this.
I've been trying to think of
how I want to design this monster, though.
Great. Tavender. The decay dragons, but a hydra.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go in the back. What are we working for?
I personally, it really makes me squirm when something really scary or obviously menacing isn't actually threatening you, so you don't know if you can actually attack it or not. And it's like super innocent, like they might be sleeping or cooking. You want to fight it so bad.
Working on his hair bun.
Mama!
All right, let's go
front. Things that either, and this is hard to draw, but things that either have, I've got to things that are hard to draw, right, that's me. Things that either for some reason or another have like a really swift speed, or maybe they can quick teleport, or maybe they like run on the walls or the ceiling or something. Just the idea that like, I play a lot of like range characters, the idea that suddenly like this thing that you see from farther away, it sees you and then suddenly it's just right up there in your face. Yeah.
That's similar to, like, you know, the whole, like, passing through walls thing. It's like,
yeah.
I have this buffer of protection.
Oh, yeah.
Do not have anymore.
Yeah. But, like, you don't even have, like, something at your back. It's just, like, suddenly the distance is just gone.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
I guess going off of that and kind of that, like, things that are things that do things that they're not supposed to and you don't expect them to.
Nice.
So, like, maybe something that doesn't look like it should be fast, that's suddenly really, really fast.
Lightning sniff.
Like a
yeah.
hippo.
The flail.
Yeah.
Oh, like something drops on all floors and just like runs after you, or something just that's really creepy. I found that players are the most freaked out when they're like, something's just not acting the way that their metagame minds are
well, the little baby's got a heart.
Yeah. A very loving mother.
I don't want this as a mini.
Looks like something from Warhammer. You could probably get like a Turrican.
That's it right there. The
yeah.
The joyful one.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Get a regular
also, like,
spider.
I'm so incredibly distracted. I'm just like...
Well, you could actually like work a lot of the elements we've talked about. Like we talked about transformations,
oh,
and that doesn't
yeah.
need to transform. But if you hit it, and then all
yeah.
of a sudden there is a swarm of babies like all over you, that's kind of like a transformation. You were fighting one thing, and now you've got a whole new level and twist to the encounter.
I just thought it was a bunch of grapes, and then grew spider legs, and they started popping, and it was
these aren't grapes at all.
I like
all the skitter hatchers or something like that.
Flout the perception of the PCs, so we think it's one thing, and it turns out to be that we don't perceive the world like we thought we did. You know, oh, you're separated from the party suddenly. No, the party was just made invisible and inaudible.
I love that mechanic.
So
fun.
So, just from like an artsy kind of like thing,
like a basic kind of like thing is like sound. I know you can't really do it in like art, but like, so look at like Silent Hill, like the movie and whatever, like part of what makes Pyramid Head like so dope is that giant knife dragging on the ground, like you just see like a still shot and you're like, I can hear that. And just like that idea of just like still kind of like movement and like sound from just like a still image really incorporates some kind of feeling from like the players when you show them that, they're like, I can hear that. And that doesn't sound good, you know?
This is a little off topic, but Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the sound work that they put into that was very subtle, but that was very much a part of why that entire movie was very underrated.
Talking about the original?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one.
There are some heathens out there.
I'm going to go for some chili right now.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
Yes.
By Toby Hooper. Oh, wow.
That's
right out of
Resident Evil.
Yeah, the follow up to human like things is just a full on human face on a body that should not have a human face.
Just
except for
Starcraft.
Like, then you have things like face spiders, they're adorable.
Well, wait, maybe I don't like spiders so much. Anyway. all right, so where should we go with this now?
What have we got? We've covered all of the different... I'm really stuck on transformations. Just the moment you said, like, yeah, we can't do transforming monsters, I was like, let's just stay there for a while and explore that. I like...
Always trying to challenge things.
Right? Well, I like monsters that... they're not necessarily scary in a traditional sense, but they are based on, like, folklore and stuff. Like, Journey to the West is a story that's been reimagined, like, a thousand different times. Like 80% of all anime is a variation on Journey to the West. And so there's a lot of characters in there that are based on like really fundamental ideas of what it is to be human, only presented as demons or, you know, gods or variations or whatever. And so I really like when a monster is something that you see and you're like, I really don't want to have to deal with that, but there's a part of me that kind of wants to be that. The monster that both scares you, but then it also, like, speaks to something about you that you actually kind of like about yourself.
Like the Lich?
Yeah.
The vain evil overlord?
Or, I mean,
we just learned something about you. I mean, that's definitely true.
I mean, the vampire holds that same similar
yep.
thing, and it's like that whole, oh, immortality, that sounds rad.
Exactly. Yeah, the variations on not just like sexy evil, but like the evil that's attractive to you, you know, like some variation on the Monkey King, where it's supposed to be a lesson about all of the things that are both good but wrong about humanity when taken into excess, you know? And you're just like, wouldn't that be awesome if I could be that completely undisciplined, wild thing? And then it can be really fun to encounter that when you don't even know that you want to fight it because it's so just awesome. It's the same kind of thing that you see in monsters that are kind of born out of nature or natural myths that are not meant to scare you, but are meant to teach you lessons. Like, in Jade Regent, the Samankar, which both have really amazing art. They've got, like, these runic tattoos, and they're, like, super yetis. I know, it's mesmerizing. It's just, it keeps getting more and more frightening.
Well, can't you give it a long time? Like, was that necessary? It's already got creepy little spider babies coming out of it. It looks like
Yeah, I will argue that a long tongue is always necessary.
I'm kind of in love with this, like, head thing, with the idea that, like, maybe, like, after you've knocked the head off, like, that thing can, like, come at you or, like, try to, like, take over your body or something.
You pop the thing, right, like, in your head out. And we're back to the thing.
It's like, we get back to stage three, and then it just, like...
It's like it's like a spider-human
yeah.
penanglin. Like,
yeah. Like, the original thing is actually just the head, and the sack isn't creating more of them. And it only looks like a spider, because looking like a spider is convenient. And then you, like... cut off pieces of it, and the actual bit comes off and comes that's after you.
That's a straight video game boss fight, though.
Yeah.
First you've got the big, slow monster, and you're like, oh, okay, we can deal with this.
then you've got like the little swarms of little baby monsters that bring in the new elements, and then right when you think you've won the fight, all of a sudden the head is like flying around, grabbing you and dropping
doing
you.
Its own thing.
Yeah, no, that's
this is
definitely
colossal, right? It's got to be colossal. Yeah, it has to be.
Not large size.
Look at all small little babies.
I don't know, a tiny.
Yeah, those are ogre spiders.
Oh, not babies.
They come out that
big.
There you go.
That's it.
Just I was not ready for Seattle.
That'd be all the difference in the world.
You told me there'd be treasure in this cave.
I didn't sign up for that. I want a refund.
Only fear and misery.
Jeez.
So you mentioned the video game boss fight, and the thing about video game bosses is that they have a very specific script.
Mm-hmm.
First stage, this happens. Then you have to do this to get to the second stage of where this happens, and so forth. And I don't think any monsters for Pathfinder that follow that.
Like multi-staged kind of.
Right, right. You have to cut off the head or you won't kill it. Once you cut off the head, the swarms are there and you can use your fireballs. And, well,
the rolls and region is probably the closest thing to that. You have to hit it with fireballs.
I think it's because, like, whereas like a video game is a lot more like rigid and it's like mechanics,
mm-hmm.
Pathfinder is supposed to be like a lot more like open ended. Like I remember I tried doing like a multi-faceted boss fight once, right? And it didn't really work out like how I wanted because no matter what you try and do, the party is just, even if they're good people, they're not good people. So they're just not gonna like, you're like, alright, and you'll name off this like one detail that's like hella obvious. You're like, alright, so the Doulahan has this giant chink in his armor, and they're like, I think I'm sure with another shock spell, you know? And it's like, alright, this is what we're doing. So, you know, just that kind of like stubborn open-endedness kind of prevents stuff like that from happening.
Saying that's making me think.
Hello?
Saying that's making me think that, like, tonight I'm gonna wake up and go, oh no, totally, this monster does the thing where if you kill it, it turns into another thing. But I'm not thinking of one right now.
And then you'll put yourself in the Paizo block.
It's a ghoul. You kill the person and then the.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, it's a spell where somebody killed becomes undead.
We're close to time, so we're going to do just three more. So you, then you, and then
the back.
So
guy.
I actually. Fourth Ed has a lot of people that hated it, but I actually think they did really good monster design, including having multi stage monsters that I thought worked really well. A lot of them focused on the whole half hit point mechanic.
Mm.
They had angels where it starts out, you know, an angel has a fear aura because it's an angel and it's scary. And it teleports to, you know, its target every round and attacks. Once you get the angel down to half health, it explodes in flame, damaging everything nearby, and transforms into a 40-foot tall pillar of flame. But since you damaged it, it's no longer scary. It just burned everything. And so I thought that was actually pretty effective. And because it was just, you know, half hit points, that's something that can still be accomplished, but you still have the transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Nice. Well, two monsters I can think of, actually they're both Cowboys of Madness, but you do fight this bug thing that it drains blood to feed the swarm inside of it. And if you let it, and you know, you're trying to save people, and if it drinks enough blood, it pops a swarm. If you kill it, but it's drinking enough blood, it pops a swarm anyways. And even if you kill it beforehand, the swarm explodes and dies and nearby people get damaged. And I do know there's also a demon that can infest corpses, going back on previous themes, where the demon can hatch from the body, which is a delightful display to destroy the body, right? But after that, it heals itself when it escapes. And it also has a bunch of other abilities that just mess with you. Like, hey, I channel negative energy. That also heals me. And if you put it in an advantageous position, the party has problems keeping up with its healing, never mind. Damage is stealing, and I once ran a multi-stage fight where the party was trying to fend off a wave of orcs attacking their fortress. Alright, first wave. A suicide bomber strapped to rhinos with alchemist fires on them. They stop those, and then next thing the orc champion comes up with like her entourage and like, oh, trolls in the front line, and people coming in the flank. So if you have groups of monsters, chained encounters, back to back off a similar theme, it can fulfill that purpose. But, I think most of the reason multi-stage fights don't happen often is if you attack a video game boss, you press a button and it happens. If you attack a Pathfinder boss, you gotta roll, you gotta look at stats, you gotta do this, so like every action takes more real world time, so it can be a bit of a challenge.
Okay, let's go to the guy behind you.
Yeah, I think the multi-station is really interesting, but what you pointed out seems to me like a real strength of role-playing game, which is that you can't really script stuff, and to me, if like you set up, here's the way I think the players are gonna beat this, and the players do something else, but they beat the fight, like, that's a win, right? You know, like, and they can, players probably feel really great about that, right? Because they feel like they, not just out smaller than a monster, but they really, like, deployed some interesting tactics and came up with something cool. And so, I do think, like, I think it's perfectly fine to, like, set up these, like, complex multi-stage encounters, and if your players can manage to come up with some triggers or weaknesses you didn't see, like, you roll with it, you look great. Yeah, we just took out this like 19-headed undead monstrosity with like babies coming at or whatever, you know. And you know, I think it kind of goes back to like the scariness factor, which is if you know the monster is really scary, and both in character and as a player who has very difficult to overcome stats, and you find a way to take it out. I mean, I've been on the player side of that. It's kind of a much, you know,
rewarding.
If you foreshadow monsters.
You smell it before you see it, if you hear it, if you know it's there. If I make you roll a whole bunch of perception checks and sneak checks and you never encounter the monster, that's terrifying.
Yeah, because you're always expecting. All right, so we're going to wrap up so we can get the next one going, because we have AV stuff to deal with. But thank you all very much, and this next hour we're going to be talking more gritty mechanics and numbers and stuff.
Oh, I didn't even notice the little black dragon in the corner. There's the little buddy. What's up, guy? He's got the little piercing.
Love that whole
thing.
Hand side.
There it is, slinking away.
That's gross.
Yeah. That's me after like a long day of work. I can relate.
Can that like...
See, that's the part you can hear, right?
Yeah.
That's the... You encounter like a smear across the floor and you're like, what?
Fluid.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.